Hi, I'm Femi Oke. Thanks for watching the stream. Today we are going to be focusing on the presidential runoff elections in Colombia. It's so important that Father's Day has been postponed for a week. Instead, on June the 19th, Colombians will get to pick their new president. We will take an in-depth look at the candidates. And if you have questions, YouTube is right here. Put your comments, your questions in here and be part of today's show. I'm looking forward to the analysis that we're going to get from Elizabeth and Laura and Silvana. Welcome all to the stream. Elizabeth, please tell everybody who you are and what you do.
Great to be here with you today. My name is Elizabeth Dickinson. I'm the senior analyst for Colombia International Crisis Group. We work on armed conflict and prevention of conflict.
Good to have you. Hello, Laura. Welcome. Please introduce yourself to our global audience.
Hi, thank you for having me. My name is Laura Gamboa. I'm an assistant professor in political science at the University of Utah. I study democratic backsliding in Latin America, in particular in Colombia, which is my home country.
All right, good to have you. And Silvana, welcome. Please introduce yourself to our stream viewers. Hello, Silvana. Can you hear us? Hi, Silvana. All right, we'll get back to Silvana in a moment. Silvana, go ahead. Introduce yourself. Right, that dramatic pause. We'll come back to Silvana.
Hi, my name is Silvana Marda, and I work for Control Risks. I am the senior analyst from the team Global Risk Analysis, and I am in charge in Colombia and specialist in Colombian politics.
All right, it was worth the wait. Thanks, Silvana. All right, let's start out with our two presidential candidates. They appear to be quite different. Let's start out with Gustavo Petro. We've got a couple of facts here. Elizabeth, help us understand Gustavo. What kind of candidate is he? He's a leftist senator. He's a former M19 member, which is an armed group. Three-time presidential candidate. Is fourth time a charm? Elizabeth, more.
Yeah, so Petro is a really interesting character because he's sort of come to embody the political left here in Colombia, partly because he's just been such a player for such a long time, because of his outspoken role as a senator, because of his time as mayor of Bogotá. But this time around is probably the moment when he has the best chance, at least according to the polls so far, to become the president of Colombia. And in fact, if he were to do so, it would be the first time in really over half a century that Colombia would have a left-leaning president. So this is really a watershed moment. And I think what Petro has been able to do successfully is two things. First, he has been really the candidate who has most successfully, let's say, read the pulse of frustration among everyday Colombians, concerns about daily life, ability to pay their bills, sort of to get ahead in life. There's a fascinating and sort of terrifying statistics from the OECD that it would take 11 generations for a child born in poverty in Colombia to rise to the median income, so sort of earning the middle. Yeah. And he's been able to channel that frustration in a way that other candidates kind of haven't been able to do. And I think that's what's given him the opportunity to come forward at this moment.
Now, let's look at his opponent together. So this is what I have about Rodolfo Hernandez. So much more, but there's more information to come, I'm sure, from you. So he's a businessman, not just any kind of businessman. He is a millionaire businessman. We're going to put the facts up there on the screen for your audience so that you can see this as well. He is a former mayor as well. He's an independent candidate. So that means, what does he stand for, Laura? What are his policies?
Oh, yeah. That's a hard question. He doesn't have much of a policy. He's what we would call an anti-establishment candidate. He runs against politicians, broadly speak, and defined as evil. He runs in an anti-corruption campaign. He has claimed he wants austerity by cutting both essential and what he thinks are unessential state entities. He doesn't quite locate himself in the left-right spectrum in the way you would expect normally. He's more of a, what we call anti-establishment. Like, he just runs against politicians.
Yeah, and see, that's very popular. That would be a very popular campaign, I imagine, because politicians in Colombia, politicians the world over, are not necessarily particularly popular. Elizabeth, he's known as the TikTok candidate, and I'm going to show our audience some of his TikToks so they understand exactly how he's campaigning. Let's have a listen. Let's have a look.
En la calle me conocen como el del real dance creep. La cara de los jóvenes del país es el turro más pegado. What the fuck is this? Si tu número es contado, Jerry, four. Ya tú, sabe, come on, sabe, sonando los bares. What you think about it? Ya la dicen a los sellos para que se preparen.
All right, so this is a genius digital team, but how is this going down in Colombia? Are people lapping it up? Are they loving these TikToks? Is his message getting across?
Well, I think what this strategy has successfully done is really channel this anti-establishment feeling. There's a great frustration with this sort of closed political class that hasn't allowed others to rise up through the system. And what Rodolfo does is really embody that in his social media campaign. He's refused to go to official debates. He's refused to do campaign events, which he describes as sort of orchestrated, charades. And he's really actually, this has actually also allowed him to not take concrete positions, but rather to sort of ride this populist wave of anti-establishment, anti-corruption rhetoric. He speaks to people in a way that they understand. This is a person who grew up very much sort of up from your bootstraps type of upbringing, made himself a businessman and sort of his own, you know, hard work is how he would tell the story. Yeah. And he speaks to people in a way that they can understand, very sort of dialectic, street conversation.
Laura, go ahead.
I was going to say that he also has designed, he has leveraged these masterfully by creating these WhatsApp campaigns. So it works in a multi-level fashion. So he would use these WhatsApp sort of delegates that would create their own messages advertising their campaign, but these are focused locally or regionally. And so they attract voters with very particular claims or promises that may not be the ones the candidate has. Like these entrepreneurs have like all sorts of liberty of proposing whatever they want.
So Silvana, what I wanted to have a look at Petro and some of his campaign videos. And what I'm looking at is a more traditional style of campaigning. He has attempted to be president on three other occasions. Let's roll that video so we can see how he's campaigning. But what I'm looking at when I see that video is his vice president. That is so interesting. Let's have a look at that campaign video and talk me through how you see Petro's campaign. How has it gone?
Yes, let's take into account that Petro has been campaigning for over 4 years or even longer. He, as a senator, has not stopped campaigning one even day on his term as in Congress. And that has been very interesting because he has sort of taken advantage of one of the most biggest social economic crises that Colombia has gone through in the past couple of years. We went through very severe protests back in 2019 and then again in 2021 after the pandemic actually made things worse for people. And then he took advantage of that opportunity to actually say, okay, I am going to lead these protests and I'm going to lead this civil unrest and I'm going to be the political face that is going to show some guidance on how we can make things different. And this is how he has been doing campaign. And what you mentioned about his political formula, this woman is being very interesting. She represents minorities in this country, not only because of her skin color, but rather mostly because she has herself lived through very difficult times. She is a victim of the conflict herself. But so is Rodolfo. Rodolfo also experienced some very difficult things in his life. So that competition in the Colombian politics stage is not that big of a deal if you take into account that in the first round or even before the first round, most of the candidates actually had experienced themselves being victims of the conflict. But Francia Márquez has sort of raised that specific voice of women, women from race, and then she has became very important in the political scenario in Colombia, and she has been reflecting on her ideas on how to make things different for minorities.
Go ahead, Lara.
I would also add that she is not only, I mean, so not only has she experienced conflict, and she comes from a sort of what we call low socioeconomic background, and she's a black woman, which in Colombia is aggravates anything else. You know, inequality is significantly worse if you're a black woman, and she comes from a region that is significantly affected by violence and poverty. But also, she's a community leader and organizer, right? Like she is grassroots, which is significantly different from what Rodolfo Hernández is. She actually has worked with these people. There are videos. I don't know if you have them, but you know, during the protest in 2020 or 21, she was there, like side by side with the people on the streets, mm-hmm. and so that makes her a very attractive grassroots sort of coordinator and figure inside Petro's campaign. And I would just wanted to link this with sort of the how you build a campaign for many years. Petro has been campaigning for a year, and he has been a candidate for I don't know, 16 years. But more importantly, in the past year, he has tried to fix the mistakes from the previous campaign. So he has built a campaign that has operatives and has like these politicians that have been all over the ideological spectrum, right? And so that, to a certain extent, has created sort of kind of this discomfort with Petro amongst mostly the more sort of radical faction of the left.
All right.
Francia Márquez fits a perfect role there because she kind of she assures people that he's for real, to put it that way.
All right, let me bring in a new voice into our conversation. This is Dr. Julia Zolver. She's from the Marie Curie Research Fellows at the University of Oxford. And this is what she told us about the VP candidate that we've just been talking about. Let's have a look. Let's have a listen.
If Francia Márquez becomes Colombia's next vice president on Sunday's second round elections, for many Colombians, this will be the first time that they actually feel represented by someone who understands the real issues that are important to them in the country. Francia is a woman. She's an Afro-Colombian woman. She comes from a rural area and has a history of social activism, and she's experienced economic hardship. So while change isn't going to happen overnight, and real political change will definitely take time, what Francia represents is the opportunity to bring these real important issues lived by everyday Colombians to the decision-making tables, and hopefully to bring about a real change that will impact people in their daily lives.
Whichever candidate gets the presidency, they both have a VP as a running mate, so who's an Afro-Colombian. So that is important, and it's a change in terms of Colombian politics as well for women, right, and also for Afro-Colombians to be on the voting slate. Now, one of the things that Julia said was about everyday issues for Colombians. Let's have a look at those everyday issues, Elizabeth. What do you think that Colombians are going to be voting for on June the 19th? What's critical?
Well, I think something that Julia also said that I think is key is that really what Colombians are looking for right now is someone who can channel their voice. And that voice, overwhelmingly, I can tell you from, you know, walking the streets of the protest last year, from going in the countryside and speaking with communities there, it's really a voice of desperation. There's a sense that this sort of daily life traumas that Colombians are living through are invisible and forgotten among the political class. So last year in the protest, for example, I remember I was speaking to a young mother in Cali who was on the streets for the first time ever attending a protest. And she said to me, my whole life has been living through an experience of economic desperation, conflict, sexual abuse, problems in accessing education. I lived through all that without realizing that I should speak up. And what I think something critical happened during these protests last year, which is that they broke open that stigma about raising these issues in the political space. So what is this election about? This election is about those issues finally rising to the surface and seeing if one candidate or another can convince Colombian voters that they'll be able to successfully channel a response. Now, whether they'll be able to do so in reality once elected is a whole other question. But right now we're in a rhetorical game to capture this very deep frustration that runs through the veins of Colombia.
Earlier we asked Carol Solis-Menco, what are the most important issues that you would be voting on? And this is what she told us.
Coming from a country with a history of armed conflict and high levels of inequality, I expect a president committed to peace, someone that understands the urgency of working on problems such as poverty. There are more than 21 million Colombians living with unmet basic needs. In education, only 39% of students who go to high school then access higher education. Corruption, 20% of Colombians consider this to be the main problem to face. Political participation for women is also a challenge. Only 30% of the new Congress will be occupied by women. We need more and better representation at all levels and a president who understands at least the previously mentioned and who has serious proposals to work on them. Those are the drivers of my vote.
Sivana, are you seeing the candidates really focusing on inequality, poverty? Is that part of their mandate?
Not really. I don't think that has been part of the main debate. Actually, there are other things that have been sort of portraying the attention, not only of the debate, but also of the media. One is representation, but one, like the most important thing that they have been debating and that Rodolfo sort of took attention completely is corruption. Corruption has been in most of the polls that have been doing the pollsters in the last couple of years, or even more strongly in the last couple of months. They have asked Colombians, what is there more worry about? And the question that raises more attention is corruption. I think people are tired of corruption. People are just sort of saying that we need a change. And this is why we're seeing a second round between these two anti-establishment candidates. And because Rodolfo sort of took away that that rhetoric about how important it is to tackle corruption, to fight corruption, and to change that stigma that the country has, is that he has been gaining so much attention. I mean, obviously, he has been very successful in managing the communication, and he's been very strategic on how he has connected to people through social media, especially TikTok. But I think the debate or the topic that he has raised the most is corruption, and that has raised some attention, that has connected to people, and that has been one of the most important things.
Sivana, if you just take a breath for a second. This is what Rodolfo Hernandez said about corruption. This was at the end of May, just so that we can hear it in his own words. And this is one of his big campaign points. Let's have a listen. Let's have a look.
Colombia's problem, its terminal cancer, is that politicians are robbing Colombia by the ton. They are struggling, and it's normal to keep stealing and continue treating us like useful idiots. Let us not allow that. In order to thoroughly break with that, on June the 19th, we need to have a vote that exceeds 12 million votes to really have a clear and forceful mandate.
What were you going to add?
No, and it is interesting because he uses very simple words. He uses very simple, straightforward messages to connect with people. But also, there are other two main things that the candidates agree with. One is to reestablish the relationship with Venezuela, both trade and diplomatic relations. And the second one is that they both propose to have an ELN peace process right ahead after they jump into the seat of president. So I think those are the three topics that they sort of touch upon constantly and have been touching upon in the mm-hmm. in the political campaign.
All right. So, guess.
If I can add...
go ahead.
Sorry, I just wanted to add, I think it's useful maybe to see a concrete example of why Colombians are so frustrated with corruption. In the last few years, we've seen several really high-profile corruption cases that have been sort of the most debased, nefarious types of corruption you can imagine. For example, a school district giving children expired food, bread as hard as a rock, and sort of inappropriate food for their school lunches that are funded by the government, and stealing that money. We saw a minister steal money that was intended to create rural electrification and internet during the pandemic so that children in the countryside could go to school. These are the types of corruption scandals that Colombians have present in their mind while they're struggling with their day-to-day life. They see these politicians, this sort of elite, close political class with the same families who have been in the center of Colombian politics for years, and this is what corruption means to them, and this mm-hmm. is why this message hits home. And one other very short point, because I think it's important also for something that was said earlier, which is it's important also to note what hasn't been in the debate for this campaign. And the most notable issue that has not been at the center of the debate is the peace agreement. 4 years ago, the presidential election was decided based on a very polarized campaign over whether or not the peace agreement should be even implemented. 4 years ago, 5 years ago now, Colombia signed a peace agreement with the largest rebel organization, the FARC, that ended half a century of conflict with that leftist guerrilla movement. Mm-hmm. 4 years ago, the debate was, should we implement this? Is this the right agreement?
Elizabeth, can I ask you then, why is it not a conversation now? Is it because the peace agreement has happened, which means that then takes it off the table? It's not the most critical thing to be talking about, security, that now Colombians can go, OK, Now we can talk about education and services and inequality. We don't have to talk about our own insecurity. Elizabeth, I'm going to ask you to answer this in a second because our audience want to talk to you as well. Go ahead.
Yes, I think that's exactly right. For 50 years, it was taboo.
All right.
Discuss these sorts of questions.
And it's no longer taboo. All right.
Exactly.
Let's go to YouTube. Just I want to make space for our audience who are trying to talk to you as well. All right. So, Carlos says, Gustavo Petro, my question for the panel is, what do they think about Petro's peace program for Colombia affected by violence through decades? Silvana, very briefly, then Laura, and then Elizabeth. Silvana, go ahead.
Yes, he's been saying that he wants to implement the peace process. And I think that the difference between now and 4 years ago is that the implementation is still the question, but that there's no longer need like to sign a peace agreement. Okay. However, the ELN is still some very important actor that needs to sign or start a peace process. Gustavo Petro has not been very broad on saying his ideas on how exactly he will manage to do a process with the ELN.
Silvana, let's share the response with Laura. Thank you, Silvana. Laura, go ahead.
So I think the biggest thing about Gustavo Petro is that he understands the armed conflict and he has been supportive of the peace process throughout. One of the most damaging things of the last 4 years has been the government's lack of impulse in pushing forward the peace agreement. They didn't destroy it. They didn't send the FARC back to the jungle, but to a certain extent, they haven't pushed it forward. And by not pushing it forward, then what we have had is the emergence of fragmentation of violence and lack of dealing with regional and local violence around illicit economies and groups that are reforming because the government never fulfilled the promises, because the government has not reached these places in Colombia with institutions like justice or schools.
All right. Okay. Sorry to push you. You've got so many things to talk about and the audience are really keen to talk to you as well. Let me show you this. This is from Gladys. Gladys shows us what the ballot will look like on June the 19th. So you've got the two presidential candidates and then there's a blank vote. This blank vote comes up in a conversation that we had with Jean Freddy a little bit earlier on. The options are candidate A, candidate B, or blank vote. Here's Jean Freddy.
The effect of misinformation on Colombian election can be resumed in just one word: fear. The massive use of fake tweets, but also audio and videos to promote conspiracy theories, as well as gender and racial attack, has achieved to create fear of both candidates. Based on falsehoods, most voters express to have feared to lose their countries in the hand of the other voters in a very polarized vision. On the other hand, the fraud plot coming from all the parties has increased the already existing untrust on election institutions, provoking that the blank vote has become a real concern in a very tight competition.
I'm just looking at how we frame today's conversation. Colombia, will elections further divide the country? Colombia goes to the polls to vote for their next president on June the 19th. We will be following that election very carefully on Al Jazeera all the way through the weekend. Elizabeth, if you had to call the election, would you or would you just wait?
One of the remarkable things about this vote from the very beginning is that it's the first time in many years that most Colombians can remember going to the polls and not having a clear idea of who will come out on top. Mm. And that's quite important because it sets the context of everything that we see in front of us. I think the first round of the election was really about one thing.
Thanks,
and I
Elizabeth.
Think it's important.
Yeah. I'm going to let you finish your sentence and then I'm going to finish the show. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Elizabeth, Laura, Silvana, thank you so much for being part of the program. Thank you for your questions on YouTube. And we will, of course, follow the Colombian presidential runoff elections on June the 19th on AlJazeera.com and Al Jazeera English. See you next time. Take care.